the Bloody Broads Pod. We're your Bloody Broads. I'm Bhavna Sharma.
And I'm Jamie Howard. We are your horror guides from page to screen and everything in between. And welcome to our episode about If It Bleeds, the short story by Stephen King.
Yes. If you guys haven't figured it out by now, this is our Stephen King month.
Month and a half, because we have so many episodes on it.
Yeah, for real. Like, so far we've already released, what did we release? We released Big Driver and Revival. And now you'll get If It Bleeds. This was Jamie's choice. Jamie, you want to tell us why this is your fave?
Yes. So I love Holly Gibney. I think she is probably one of King's strongest lead characters, to say the least. She is his only 21st century character, lead character who's a female besides our lead character in Revival, which we talked about last episode. I also just love that she reminds me of a lot of people that I know in real life who are just very no nonsense, but also, okay. When I read these stories with Holly, I'm like, damn, that bitch is just like me. Because she has a complicated relationship with her family, specifically her mom. She is on Lexapro. She says it multiple times. She has a female therapist who she sees once a month, and she has a knack for finding patterns. And I was like, wow, wow. And then her daily drink of choice is a Diet Coke. And I was like, ah.
Yeah. I mean, you and me both, Holly. You and me.
Right? I don't understand how you could write someone that's so accurate. But truly, like, she's just one of the more intelligent lead characters that I think in all of Stephen King's books, which is probably a hot take, but I stand by it.
Honestly, yeah, and it has nothing to do with her mental illness either, because I know people are going to try and pin that. You know, it's like, no, it's 100%. Nothing. She doesn't have, like, a preternatural, like, ability to be that smart. She just fucking is.
It's really refreshing, honestly, to have a character who's incredibly intelligent, incredibly kind, and who's just really good at her job for the sake of being good at her job. And I know there's a lot of dialogue going around right now about, like, oh, you know, women being told that we can succeed in our career was such a cop-out. But for someone that doesn't want kids, like, I love achieving stuff at my job. I say as I wear a Slytherin sweatshirt. I mean, we are not TERFs. We do not support J.K. Rowling. No. But it's just really interesting to me that there's all this backlash against the trope of someone being dedicated to their job when it's a woman. But if it's a guy, they're like, oh, he's a genius. Like, if a woman, okay, because I work in social media for my day job, if a woman behaved the way that Elon Musk is behaving right now.
Oh my God. Instant firing, tarred, feather, blacklisted, doxed.
Right. Well, and then we do have Elizabeth Holmes, who, the infamous Theranos scammer, who essentially tried to pull a Elon Musk, but is now being, you know, sued by everyone and their mother, including the Justice Department.
As they should.
I mean, why did you agree to do this, Bhav? Why is this also an option for you?
Well, I fucking love Holly Gibney.
Same.
I devoured the Mr. Mercedes trilogy when it came out. Like, I only got wind of it, I think, when the first two books were out, and then the third one hadn't been out yet. And I watched it. I mean, I watched it later, but I read them. And I was just like, at first I was a little bit wary, again, because of the mental illness factor. I'm like, okay, she's clearly got something going on. I forget whether they mentioned if she's on the spectrum or something as well.
I don't know.
Or she's got some, I don't know if that's the wrong term. I apologize, guys. That's the only term I know right now. But I was a little bit wary, and I was like, okay, are they going to make her like a token, like, you know, sidekick or something like that? But then in the end, where, spoiler alert, guys, Bill Hodges, you know, eats it. She ends up taking over and everything. And like, I was like, is she going to hold her own? But then when I read the next one I read her in, I don't know if It Bleeds came out before then, was The Outsider.
So this came out right after that. This came out April 15th, 2020. So literally at the height of the pandemic starting.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So then, yeah, because obviously I'm an idiot. Of course it had to come out after The Outsider because they include Ralph Anderson, who is the lead detective in
The Outsider. And so I've never read The Outsider. This actually spoiled the ending of The Outsider for me. Which I'm okay with. Yeah, I'm okay with it. I mean, there's plenty in Stephen King's books to still enjoy, but
yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest complaints about this book is that it was too much, not this book's, but this short story within the book, was that it was, quote, and I'm quoting this from a Goodreads review, a carbon copy of The Outsider, which I disagree with. Similar concept.
I disagree as well.
Yeah.
I disagree as well. The creature, I could point some similarities, which I kind of do in my notes, but it's not the same.
Yeah. So for for those who have not read The Outsider, why don't you kind of tell them why?
Okay. Well, heavy spoilers for The Outsider. Right. So if you want to skip ahead, I'd say skip ahead maybe 30 seconds. Oh, yeah. You know what? Let's be generous. Give it about 45 seconds or so from now. But so The Outsider is similar in the sense of like, yes, there is a supernatural kind of creature that, you know, is plaguing them and like causing mayhem and murder and all this stuff in its wake. However, the major difference is that the creature in The Outsider is he feeds on grief. He feeds on grief. So like, if families that recently had a tragedy happen, right, or, you know, traumatized communities. It's been a while since I read it as well. Like it's been about 2 years since I've read The Outsider, but I believe like that, like its home is in like this like subterranean cave.
Is it a cave?
In the middle of like Texas or something.
Yeah. That much I do know.
Yeah. And it's akin to, or at least fans theorize that it's akin to Pennywise. So like in terms of like that pantheon of weirdo creatures that like, whereas so Pennywise feeds on your fear, the Outsider feeds on your grief. And instead of being some wackadoodle clown or like these other figures in your life, like it also like, it can just duplicate you and stuff like that, which is kind of creepy. But this guy is different. Chet, whatever the heck you want to call him.
Andowski.
Chet. So he's more, I'd say, like, what? He only has, like, what, the two templates, basically, that he flips between? Like, he doesn't necessarily become someone that you know. Like, not that kind of a shapeshifter. More like, I've got, like, these three outfits, these three meat suits, and they're mine.
Right. So, Holly notes, and I want to read this directly from the book. Holly notes that she said, McBain said there are only two types of human faces, pig and fox faces. I'd add that sometimes you see a man or woman with a horse face, but they're rare. Mostly it's pigs and foxes, which now every time I reread this, it's all I can picture is like I start sorting people in our lives into pigs and foxes. And there's very obviously the occasional horse face. And we all know that sounds so mean, but it's just.
But it's true.
Horse face is such a loaded term because it's such a slur from like, not slur, but like an insult from the early 2000s.
Yeah.
But it's true. And so Holly realizes kind of through her, you know, previous experience that Chet can only shapeshift into these three templates, and one's a pig face, one's a fox face, and he never really does the horse face, but he kind of does variations of the fox face, you know?
He does.
You know who he reminds me of?
Who?
Randall from Monsters, Inc., the purple snake-looking thing. Because you know how he'll, like, Randall can, like, blend in. He's like a salamander. Mm-hmm. He can, like, disappear into the background of wherever he is.
Yeah,
that's how I feel Chet really operates. And it's really sinister that he can feed. So if Pennywise feeds off your fears and the Outsider feeds off your grief, it feels like Chet feeds off of tragedy, but not necessarily grief. Just fear, I guess, like a combination of the fear and the grief, which would be tragedy.
Yes. Yeah, that'd be it. And honestly, sorry, side note, I think I would also add Rose the Hat in this pantheon.
I forgot about how she would fit into this. Okay, so Rose the Hat, yeah, which we've discussed at length in our Dr. Sleep episode, because she's one of the best, in my opinion, best Stephen King villains of all time. Top five.
Fuck yes.
Bhavna's like pointing her finger, doing like the number one sign. She feeds off of what I conceive as not just youth, but innocence. And again, we talk at length mm-hmm. about this in our Dr. Sleep episode. Mm-hmm. But it's really interesting to me that Stephen King keeps using these tropes, these characters, these templates that are related to modern day American conspiracy theorists.
You know, I never quite thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right.
Well, so for people who are not American or who are not as familiar with the QAnon stuff, QAnon is part of this super right-wing conspiracy theory, I don't know how to phrase it, conspiracy theory group. And they think that the upper echelon of the quote-unquote liberal media or the liberal elite, they think that people feed off of children's youthfulness, which they call adrenochrome. And
I forgot about that. I try to block this stuff out of my mind, to be honest.
Listen, I've tried. But it's really interesting to me that Stephen King uses a lot of those tropes in his books before they become salient public opinion. And the only reason I say that is because, unfortunately, QAnon has become, it's still not mainstream, but it was just at the forefront, I think, of the 2020 elections in America.
To be fair, the idea of people feeding off of people's innocence or youth or like that kind of stuff is a pretty old theory, but I like, you know, like Elizabeth Bathory.
Right.
But I wouldn't credit people that believe the QAnon stuff with that many brain cells to think
not
about
it.
A Hungarian countess.
Yeah, not at all. And I love Elizabeth Bathory's mythos. So, I mean, if she was a real person, which I assume she was.
She was a real person.
Right. I assumed that maybe some of it was a little bit exaggerated with the bathing of the blood, but some of it was not.
There was never any proof. And it was all hearsay from a bunch of politically opposed people.
Shocker. A woman getting painted as the victim, you guys. But yes, I find it really interesting that Chet in this story is a reporter throughout his iteration. So throughout the years, mm-hmm. because it feels a little boomerish sometimes. Like this is exactly how American conservatives view, quote unquote, the media, you know, capital M, the media.
Oh, God.
They always say that they're pushing a narrative and they're just telling you the worst of the worst. But that's the whole point of the title of this book and short story that it's named after, because the full phrase is, if it bleeds, it leads.
But weren't they the ones that perpetuated Rush Limbaugh?
Right.
Aren't these the people that made him famous?
I can really go on like at length about this, to be honest, but
But the if it bleeds, it leads is a popular saying in the journalism world, because honestly, it's true. If it bleeds, it leads your headlines. Like that's why back in the 90s, where you had the, I don't know if you remember, or you might know, you might not remember, you were a kid. We were all kids, but was it Mary Jo Buffito? I forget their last name, but it was basically like the woman that got shot by the mistress of her husband, the teenage mistress of her husband. And it ended up being this big thing, but it was a huge tabloid sensation. It was leading everything until, if it bleeds, it leads, Lorena Bobbitt chopped off her husband's penis.
Okay, obviously I know Lorena Bobbitt, but I was like, what?
There were CBS like made for TV movies about that other couple.
I forget their name.
I need to look it up. But
I was a little bit too young for that, but I do remember Lorena Bobbitt as I got older.
Yes. But in general, though, like you'll have one big news story, but then the moment something else happens, the moment if someone dies, if there's like mayhem, if there's an explosion, if there's whatever else, boom, knocked off the front pages.
That is wild. Yeah, no, I was only 2 years old when that happened. So I don't, I don't remember that part, but I remember her being like a joke, you know, punchline in the coming years. But it's so funny to me that people want to, I don't know, I have a lot of friends that work at some major news outlets. So I'm very sensitive to this when people are like, oh, the media portrays people as this way or whatever. And I'm like, okay, but a lot of people also just have foot and mouth disease where, you know, you say something and like immediately you just want to, you're putting your foot in your mouth. Like you're like, oh my God, why did I say that?
I genuinely, like I have a friend and we basically go, foot and mouth. His name. Like he's the sweetest guy. Like he's so nice. I love him. I love his family, but he has the habit and it's not even like, he's not dumb or anything at all. He'll just say something and he'll be like,
right, where he's like, why did I say that?
He's like, he'll do this thing where he just like, you guys can't see, but he just puts his hand up, he just squints and he just goes, yeah, okay, sorry. And like,
well, and also I think it's so important to talk about the context, which it's wild to phrase it as historical context, but it's true. The historical context in which Stephen King wrote this book, and the book came out again mid-April 2020, but he started writing some of these stories right after Trump got elected, even that, even during the campaign, and even while he was still, I mean, we don't know how early some of the drafts of these were made, but specifically in this story, which is probably the longest out of all three of them or four of them, right?
Oh, it like, definitely was.
Yeah. Because it becomes the titular short story of the book itself, the short story collection. You know, Holly mentioned several times when she sees the news, it's just, quote, the president putting his foot in his mouth. And when I look back at that section of 2020, we were all so naive. We were all like, this is going to be 2-3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks at the most. We're going to all shut down for that amount of time. You know, Trump is too stupid to do anything that impactful. Like we were all so, and I say naive because it was hopeful. And it's funny because we keep hearing in this book or reading in this book, I should say, that Holly has what the other characters call Holly hope, where she's so Pollyanna and she's so positive that they call it Holly's hope. Like she just wants everyone to be okay. And she wants everyone to be the best version of themselves.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting for someone who's a private detective. Like, that's really interesting to me that she still wants to try to see the best in people.
Yeah. Especially given everything she's been through personally. Like what, her cousin being murdered by a deranged, I guess he'd be a serial killer, right? Or mass killer? Or serial mass killer? He was a serial killer. Like, you know, that whole thing, her relationship with her mom, like Bill passing.
Yeah, she talks a lot about, in this short story, dealing with a mom after her dad has passed. And her mom sounds a lot like a lot of people I know's mom and having a complicated relationship. But I just think that Holly is probably one of the most relatable Stephen King characters.
Agreed.
By a landslide.
Agreed. I'd say like she's pretty relatable. Dan Torrance is pretty relatable.
Yeah. I know people listening to this are like, well, you should not be relating to any of these people. And I'm like, yeah, well.
Read Dr. Sleep. Maybe then you'll realize why Dan Torrance is relatable.
Yeah, I know.
I agree. Like now I'm trying to think of like relatable Stephen King characters, like maybe Jamie Morton.
I think so.
I think he's pretty relatable, especially of everybody in his family.
Like it's everybody in his family and everybody in Holly Gibney's family. I mean, it just
Stephen King is like really good at writing that singular person in a crowd that has been, and my words aren't going to be the greatest here, but that have been that are just really good at seeing the world for what it is.
Yeah.
Through the lens of their own drama.
Mm.
And these characters we mentioned are definitely those, like the people that will generally see the bigger picture better than everybody else.
Correct.
So like your Losers Club, your like them versus the bullies. The bullies are very narrow-minded, whereas the Losers Club are like, literally there is something bigger to worry about here. Like,
yeah. Couldn't agree more. Yes. I have a lot of thoughts on that.
Same. Would
Before
you like
we
to
continue these thoughts?
Ah, yes. Is it time for a commercial break?
It is. We're going to take a quick commercial break.
Alrighty, guys. Stay tuned for some more free thoughts.
So we're back, and Bava and I have a lot of feelings about how salient this story is, and not just because it's Stephen King's most recent, well, second most recent now, because Fairy Tale just came out. but there's a quote that I wanted to read from, I think it's like the second or third section of this short story.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel very passionate about this because I'm just like, oh, wow, this is so relatable to pretty much anyone born after, you know, 1986 going forward, 1985 going forward.
Okay.
It says, like most people in the media-soaked 21st century, Holly had become inured to the violence men, and in quotations, or excuse me, parentheses, it's still mostly men, do to each other in the name of religion or politics, those ghosts. But what happened at that suburban middle school is too much like what almost happened at the Midwest Culture and Arts Complex, where Brady Hartsfield tried to blow up a few thousand kids, and what did happen at City Center, where he plowed a Mercedes sedan into a crowd of job seekers, killing, she doesn't remember how many. She doesn't want to remember.
Neither and would I.
Right. And so this obviously refers to what happens in Mr. Mercedes. Again, if you have not read those books, they're amazing. Bava and I have both read them and enjoy them. Same with the TV series. But she references in a conversation with Jerome, her assistant, not too long after this, the mass shooting. So they talk about the Vegas mass shooting.
Oh, true.
Yeah, they talk about Columbine. They talk about several others, Timothy McVeigh, which that was a bombing, not a shooting, but
still a mass murder.
Right. And so they talk about mass murder a lot and how in America, we've just become so numb to it. And I would expand that to North America in general, Mexico, Canada, United States.
Agreed.
Yeah. Just,
it doesn't really happen here, but we're still as desensitized because we have the same news outlets.
Exactly. So, you know, I think this is what Stephen King's way of sort of commenting on the fact that it's male-centered violence through his female character. But then he does go on to make Jerome, who starts talking about his great-grandfather, he makes Jerome say the N-word, which in 2020, we both recoiled from this reading it.
Also not something Jerome would say.
Well, because, okay, so
not, at least not to Holly.
Right, because Jerome is a Harvard-educated young black man who's taking a semester off to finish his novel about his great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, who turned out to be like a hustler, and then in the truest sense of the word, gangster. When I say gangster, I mean like mobster.
Yeah.
In his hometown at the time. And I think Jerome, the context that it's used in is, you know, crime took his great-grandfather down because he was the wrong skin color, which is true. But I think you're right that I do not think he would say that to...
Not to Holly. Not unless he was quoting something or something like that. Like him amongst his family, amongst his friends, sure, I could see it. But like to Holly, I wouldn't think so.
And again, this is something we talked about in The Shining. It's something we talked about in... Well, he doesn't really have to deal with it in Dr. Sleep as much. But we constantly bring it up that, like, Stephen King's touch point of, like, cultural insensitivity, you know, blatant, covert racism is that he makes his black characters occasionally, every couple of books, say the N-word in reference to themselves. And I'm like, Oh God, why? Like,
Stephen knows. Stephen, why? Yeah.
Right. So we're not immune to that, right? And we do fondly call him Uncle Stephen. If you've listened to the past episodes, you might be sick of hearing that. We don't care. But we're not immune to the fact that that's problematic of him. It's a blind spot, I think, in his learning. And he's a white elder man who's pushing 80. Like, the man is in his mid-70s. Like, he should know better at this point.
He really should know better at this point, especially with the team he has around him. Like, I'm pretty sure he's not surrounded by a bunch of sycophants.
No, because he hates... Okay, he's 75 years old. He just turned 75 last month. Okay. And I just... He knows better. So
he does.
We fully agree on that. People that are listening and they're like, we can't believe you guys are still covering Stephen King. We fully acknowledge the issue. Yeah. But I think on the flip side of that, and correct me if I'm wrong, it just feels like he also does a really, really good job of making characters people in a way mm-hmm. that a lot of popular authors rely on stereotypes or tropes is what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, am I off base?
No, definitely not off base. Like, he finds a way to humanize people in the best way possible. Does he slip occasionally? Yeah, far less than he used to, which honestly in this day and age, thumbs up. And especially at the age that he's at.
The bar is in hell.
The bar is in hell. Like, I'm definitely not the type of person... Okay, am I quick to judge... Not judge, but am I quick to condemn people for their wrongdoings? Yes. But am I open to being fans of theirs again, or like letting them back into my lives if they've learned? Yes. You know?
And I think that's the rub with King is that so much of his writing hits home for me, and that so much of it, my non-white friends are like, girl, what? Like, we see it the same way. And I think this short story in mm-hmm. particular is really interesting to me, that Holly is the only white main character who isn't kind of a shithead.
No. And the thing I love about Holly as well is that she's so universal that, like,
yes.
I loved her portrayal by Cynthia. I can never pronounce her last name. It's like Enrivo?
Yeah.
Amazing woman, amazing voice, amazing acting skills. But, like, unpopular opinion, she's my favorite iteration of Holly. Like, I have nothing against, I believe it was Justine Lupo.
So Justine Lupe played her in Mr. Mercedes, and then Cynthia Erivo played her in The Outsider. Yeah. And I've never read The Outsider, but I have seen it. So it's like, you know, I see the overlap because it's still Holly, but I do find it really interesting that he picked a black woman to play her.
Yeah, because I feel like, and I don't get me wrong here, it's like she's a character you could kind of cross.
Oh yeah,
over. In that Absolutely. Sense, like you could, I don't want to use the term race bend because that just sounds really cringy, but like if you were to make Jerome white, that wouldn't work, but
right.
You could make Holly almost anything.
Any race.
Well, any race, because all you had to do was just make sure she still had her rich privilege.
Right.
Which is not unique to just being white.
Which you should join our Patreon and listen to our episode of Bodies, Bodies, Bodies to just hear us discuss the intersection of race and wealth. but truly, like, it doesn't, I mean, first of all, he's a black man from Chicago, but like, his whole backstory wouldn't make sense if he were any other race, because it deals specifically with the situation of being a black American who chose to succeed before, you know, any kind of civil rights act was put into place. And I think that's kind of the crux of it, right? Like, King tries to compress these very big ideas into short stories, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Because going through the Goodreads of this, people did not like this version of Holly's story. Like, they were like, this is too short for her. I disagree. But people
I
saying,
disagree as well.
Yeah, people were saying they liked Mr. Harrigan's phone and Rat more than this story. And I was like, you liked Rat more than this?
No.
I disagree.
I mean, Rat was okay, but no, not versus this. Like, this is a nice little bite-sized Holly right. story. No pun intended. But oh man, but no, this is there's no bad Holly Gibney story. Like, there just isn't.
Agreed. And I think the people on Goodreads who are bashing this so hard are people who just don't like female protagonists, which sounds so reductive, but that's who it boils down to.
No, it's the ones that don't, we say they don't like female protagonists because we can cut to the bone, but you have to cut through their like, no, but I just don't think, or like, no, but I like women. I just don't, blah, 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 blah,
blah. They
said
that she was too, quote, and I have the page pull up in front of me now.
Oh, of course
stiff,
you
do. Awkward. One person in particular said that she was flat, personality-wise.
But her, did they not read?
They didn't
her
read
intro,
Mr. Mercedes. Clearly.
Where like they introduced the fact that she clearly has mental illness that she's in.
Right, like, and I don't know anyone listening if you've ever been on SSRI, specifically Lexapro or generic. It really takes a little while for you to, it takes about a year for you to fully settle in. I would say 3 to 6 months before you start feeling a lot of the best effects of it. But the side effects too are like, you can be as excited as you want to be, and you're going to have a little bit of a flat effect if your body reacts that way, because everybody's body chemistry is different.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I remember when, since you've said you're on it.
I'm fine, yeah.
It's no secret to the pod, but I remember when you were starting it and you gave me the warning as well. You were like, hey, like, I'm starting this out. If I don't sound the same, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, it's fine. And, like, you were fine throughout. Like, I mean, I think by that time I also knew you well enough to know that,
yeah.
Like, okay, yes, she is enthusiastic about what we're talking about. But, like, even if you hadn't warned me, I probably would have been slightly concerned that you didn't sound as, you know.
Chipper. Yeah, because I'm a very bubbly person, naturally. Yeah. And I think it's really just, you know, a stark contrast.
Yeah.
And it's the nuance that people lack that kills me. I mean, truly. So, specifically, getting back to the storyline.
Yes.
You know, she's friends with Jerome and his family, the Robinsons. And mm-hmm. I think there's this nuance that a lot of people who don't live in a city when they're connected to their neighbors lack. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, there is a huge disconnect. Like, I can tell you right off the bat, I was the type of person that never really got super close to my neighbors. My brothers
right.
did. I didn't. Like, I lived in an apartment building. Like, I didn't really have any. To be honest. And that's not me exaggerating. Like, I had, okay, yeah, I had maybe one or two, but for a while I had like nobody but my family.
And I think that's also a cultural thing.
It is. And also, like, I was bullied in elementary school, like, thankfully not physically, but I still carry those scars, if you know what I mean.
Listen, girls ages like 8 to 14 are the meanest motherfuckers you will ever meet in your life.
They are, and God forbid you're naturally a tall person and
right,
therefore
like,
have to carry more body fat.
Yeah.
Then you don't know it's science when you're like 8 or 9 years old. I have been 5'7" since I was about 11 or 12 years old. I've been 5'7" for that long. I had size 7 feet in like grade 5, like size 7 women's. So it's like, I am by no means an Amazon.
But well, and I think too, it just goes, yeah. And it just goes to show that like Holly, I think the reason you and I in particular are connected to her is that she kind of has that same, it's not even flat effect. It's a guarded sense of self. Where she's like, all right, let me do my best in the situation. And then she notices patterns, which, again, is a hallmark of both autism and ADHD.
Holla.
I mean, I fail to see where this is a flat version of Holly. I really do.
same. She's such a dynamic person. Like, if you read it, she has hobbies, she has interests, she has things she's enthusiastic about. Even in her, like, internal monologue, she's making references to, like, The Good Place and to, like, other things.
I love that she watches that because she's essentially the love child of Chidi and Eleanor.
Definitely. Definitely. I could see her doing a whole thing about the trolley metaphor.
Yeah.
Like, I could see it. Like, I could definitely see it.
So throughout this, you know, version of the short story, they're tracking Chet on Dowski. And essentially what we said in the beginning, right? Like, it becomes sort of the story like The Outsider, where he can kind of shapeshift in these two different people, although The Outsider could technically do more. But she's also dealing with the grandfather who has dementia, which my grandfather just passed away from Alzheimer's about 3 weeks ago as of this recording. And so that always hits home because he struggled with it for a couple years before he passed away. She struggled with her relationship with her mom, with trying to be like the quote unquote perfect private eye, private detective, you know. And it's really interesting to me that she is essentially chasing this cartoon level villain at this point. Because it's the school bombing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm blanking on a couple of the second event, but then the one at the very end.
But there was another one, and it was big, and it was big enough that the news had to be there, and therefore Chet.
Well, you know, and then she's doing her investigation thing, and she meets this other guy who's a psychotherapist, and he's like, oh, I have this information. His actual name is blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So, and we're not a recap podcast, so, you know.
We're not.
We're banking on you guys to have read this.
But only if right. It's relevant.
So we get to this, they track him down, and we get to this scene where they finally kind of, not cornered him in her building, but I want to say enticed him.
She entrapped him in the building.
Right. And entrapment, honestly, is a seduction, in my opinion. Because yeah. You have to kind of lie to get someone to come into the trap.
And like leading up to that, though, is a point I actually wanted to bring up.
Yeah,
Leading up to it, the Robinsons kind of get themselves entrapped into this entanglement.
Yes.
Because they have a tracking app, like kind of like the Find My Friend or whatever version Stephen King had that wasn't copyrighted. They basically tracked Holly's phone because they were concerned about her because she was lying and she's not that great of a liar.
No.
Especially not to those that know her that well. So she put that in there and whatever. So they put that in there and they trapped and they like kind of followed her. So on the wrong fucking day, couldn't they have followed her to the Leeds? Couldn't they have followed her somewhere else? No. They had, in true Stephen King fashion, they chose the day that she was entrapping this otherworldly, innerworldly entity, which also I'm glad we don't get as much explanation about him. I like that.
I like that too, because it was veering into cosmic horror territory. And I was like,
Yes, exactly. I'm like, do you know about the ants, sir? Are you in league with the ants? If you don't know about the ants, listen to our episode from our last episode, which is Revival, where we talk about the ants. But where I was going with this was, so they put the tracking app on and they find her and then they get entrapped with it. Like, I think he holds the younger sister hostage.
Yes.
Or something like that. Yeah, exactly. And like, obviously you knew that was going to happen. But I want to ask you, like, how do you feel about them using a tracking app? Because, yes, fine. It ended up, quote unquote, saving her life in a sense. But I don't know how I feel about that.
So a lot of people that I know, I'm choosing my words so carefully right now, have the Life 360 app because it works with Android and iPhone.
Okay. I have never heard of this app in my life.
Yeah. It's like Find My Friends on iPhone, but it's for everybody. Whether you're on Android, iPhone, your laptop, whatever. I understand if you have like teenage kids who are driving for the first time and you want to know where they are or whatever. Far be it from me to tell a parent, like, hey, this is how I would do it, you know?
Yeah.
But as long as Holly was consenting to it, I'm like, whatever. But I don't think she was in this book, but it ended up saving her life. So
it ended up saving her life, but it also ended up putting Jerome's sister in danger. So it's almost like,
right. So Jerome's sister takes it upon herself to like track Holly down.
Yeah. Meanwhile, like if Holly had consented, I wouldn't have given a shit. This wouldn't even have crossed my mind because I know so many people that have that find my phone thing, but it's more like, no, hey, can I do that for you? And you do that for me? Or like, us as visibly picked upon women after a certain hour or any hour, really. It's very much like the text me when you get home or if I don't call you by 3 a.m., if I don't like text you by 3 a.m., like, please call the authorities. This is where I went.
Right. Like that's why I have it on turned on my phone. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm okay with it. I guess. I don't know. That's a complicated question.
Yeah, like my super millennial version of that was like, well, as long as I let one person I live with know where I am at all times, I'm good to go. So like, it's like, tell my brother, I'm going to a bar. If I don't come home tonight, well, like, let mom know.
Yeah. Well, they track him down to the house, listen to me, to the
agency.
Yeah, to the agency. I mean, Holly essentially lives there because she works so much. So that's where my mind went. And they trap him by getting him in the elevator. And they allude to it at the beginning of the book with the, you know, oh, we fixed the elevator, but it was by a glitch or whatever. A hack is what she calls it.
Right.
And they get the elevator to stop like just above their floor so they can shove him down the elevator shaft.
Yep.
That whole thing didn't feel real to me. That did not feel like that's how you would kill a supernatural being, but that's me.
No, and I had to reread it twice because the action sequence didn't quite make sense to me.
Same.
Normally with his action sequences, I can follow along. I don't need to go back, but that's one I had to go back. And I listened to this one on audiobook. So like, I had to be like back 15 seconds, 30 seconds, like a minute, like, let me get back there. But no, that is not how you would kill a supernatural human being. That was probably the only part where I'm like, Holly, are you a dumb fuck? Like, come on. You have more brain cells than this. Come on. So you dealt with the outsider. You think an elevator shaft is going to kill this dude?
Right. So is Chet dead? Is he dead?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Not only because of the, like, at the end where, like, her uncle, you know, says, hello, Holly, in the same way that that Chet would say. Not only just because of that, but because of the ways King writes. If he leaves something purposefully vague, I'm going to take it at face value.
Same.
He's not like the Inception coin at the end of... He's not the Inception little doodad at the end.
The top, like, yeah.
The little top. He's very much like, this happened, this wasn't in her head type of thing, so...
I just wasn't convinced that Ondowski was dead because finding a pile of clothes is just so inconclusive for Holly's personality to deduce, like, okay, yeah, he's dead.
Yeah.
And he was hiding in plain sight as a reporter, so why couldn't he be the second template of himself as George, who was an actor on the TV? You know, like, I was like, oh. Because she recalls George from the courtroom drama show, which is supposed to be like Judge Joe Brown in their universe, but it's a different judge. I don't know. I don't know. This and the ending, you and I both had a lot of thoughts about.
Yeah. Like, that ending was very, like, to me personally, like, yeah, it convinced me that he wasn't dead if I wasn't already convinced by the lack of evidence. Like, sorry, if there's no body. Like, people have, you know,
in case.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking more along the lines of, like, look at for how many decades people thought Princess Anastasia Romanoff was alive. There was no body, therefore.
Listen.
You know?
Okay, so you already called this out, so we can talk about it. But the ending with the Hello, Holly.
Yeah.
That led me down a rabbit hole. Oh, chills. That led me down a rabbit hole of how I felt about the ending of this book. I think that Uncle Henry might have been possessed by the outsider or Chet's 100%. Demon at the end. Okay. 100%. I'm glad we agree.
100%.
Okay.
because one, he wouldn't throw that in there. Two, I swear I don't just read Stephen King. I just haven't read in a while and he's easy. Okay.
Yeah.
Like his writing puts out in my mind.
Same.
But I recently read, Later by Stephen King. It's a very good one. And again, spoilers for Later. But if you're remembering the scene at the end with the dad, like he's, I guess, brother, uncle dad.
Yeah.
Something like that. But basically the whole premise, like he's not possessed, but it was just basically like Stephen King likes endings like this and they don't mean nothing. They mean something. Right. So if he puts in a line like that at the end, it means something. And why it made me think of Later was like, you know, ghosts can't lie to that kid, or the recently deceased can't lie to that kid.
I mean, so there were three things that I noticed where I was like, So number one, very obviously, is that they keep talking about how Uncle Henry, quote, moves like lightning to help another resident, which is also how Chet moves. So both of them moving quickly is kind of mentioned more than once. And it's also how Chet Ondowski is able to get to the victims after every emergency that he visits.
Yeah.
And it's also, again, it's how Henry helps the fallen resident. Also, I think this explains why Henry gets stronger once he's in the nursing home, because he's feeding off the pains of everyone else who's kind of like old age, isolation. And I think it's why he stays with Holly's mom.
Yeah.
Because Holly's mom kind of exudes this pain, this suffering, this victim complex that she has going. And he just knows that Holly's fear is so strong, and that her mom's fear is strong, and her deceased sister's fear was so strong. I just think it's why Holly keeps attracting this level of, I know it's so sad, but I just feel like Holly is like drawn to this emotional, painful experience. Like she's a magnet for it, which makes me so sad. And then the last line of the book where he says, "Hello, Holly," is just so sinister to me, because he's been getting her name wrong this whole time because he has, you know, dementia, because the evil recognizes her because she's attracting it. And I don't know. I don't know if this is true. It's just my theory, but
Also hot take, just to tie it into your theory, to, you know, get all Charlie Day about it, which I don't even know the name of his character on that show. I just know it as Charlie Day .gif or .jpg. But she's sending all of these recordings to Ralph Anderson.
Right.
Ralph Anderson is the lead detective who was in charge of the Outsider case, played by Ben Mendelsohn in the HBO series.
Yes.
Excellently played. And he's very experienced with the Outsider. So part of me thinks maybe Holly had a suspicion. Otherwise, one, why include those details in her recordings to him? Two, I think maybe she was initially worried about Chet being Outsider or Outsider-esque, because clearly that's why she sent it to Ralph, because who else would believe her?
Right. Like, you just blew my mind a little bit, reminding me that, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Who else would believe it? So I believe it started out with thinking that Chet, just about Chet.
Yeah.
But I think she included the Henry bits, because those are in her recordings to him. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, they are.
It's been a few weeks since I reread it, but she has that in there. So why send it to Ralph?
I don't know. You just like blew my mind a little bit. I'm sitting here like looking at my notes from the episodes, like, how did I miss that? But I mean,
all of our Tumblr and AO3 cuties, please write.
I know. We're going to get back on Tumblr, I swear, because it's time. Yes. Well, Bob, if it's okay with you, I was going to go ahead and give my like final thoughts.
Go nuts.
Okay. So this book has like, the book overall, all three short stories are like a 4.5 out of 5 for me, but this short story is about a 4 out of 5 for me. Just because it sticks out kind of like a sore thumb with the other two. The other two are a little bit more like cosmic, spiritual, existential horror. But I feel like this story in particular is about King's addiction, as most of his short stories are, and then the recovery from what I like to call spiritual malaise and facing his own demons, where he's met up with the big bad. He's met up with the, what Jerome in the short story calls outer evil and inner evil. And he's grappled with it. I'm going to give this book overall, including the short story, a 4.5 out of 5 black cats with messy fur.
Good call. I am going to give it that as well, only because I'm biased and I love anything with Holly Gibney in it. But also that I think, and hot take again, but any story with Holly Gibney has been King's strongest, aside from his pulp paperbacks in the last couple of years. To be quite honest, like these, and then like the pulp, the hard case ones, the like Joyland and later. Aside from that, this has been pretty good for him. Because I think by now he definitely is just comfortable writing Holly.
Yeah.
And he's not one to repeat characters this many times, so I'm happy for her anytime I get her. But I will fight anybody that tells me this is too close to The Outsider or too close to Mr. Mercedes, because get fucked, one. But two, so what? She's right, got a specialty.
Right. Like, we got a bazillion Dick Tracy stories. Let me have Holly Gibney.
Like, I'm sorry, Law and Order SVU, which all of you know I love.
It's almost like, what, 20th season?
24th, man. We're on season 20 fucking God, four.
I feel so old.
How many different iterations of non-consensual anything can you have?
Right.
How many stretches can you have where they try to fit homicide in the plot? Or like drug trafficking or something where they make a stretch and they're like, this is somewhat of a sex crime to lead us in. Like, you know,
let me have my recurring Holly Gibney.
Somewhat like supernatural detective. Like shrug. Is this, are you human or are you dancer? We don't know. The killers are still cool, guys. The killers are still cool.
They're still cool.
But, well, yes. 4.5 matted, bloody matted black cats out of 5.
People who have never seen the book cover are going to be like, the hell does that mean?
We should make the book cover one of our
photos. We will. All right, guys. So, Bhavna, where can the people find you?
They can find me on Twitter, because I'm not leaving, as at the Lucky Charms. And they can find me on Instagram if they prefer at the Lucky Charms with a fancy little underscore at the end. I don't post often. I hope you like pictures of brunch. Where can they find you, Jamie?
They can find me at Glitter Burrito on Twitter, at Jamie Kirsten H, K-I-R-S-T-E-N-H. On Instagram, you guys can find us at Bloody Broads Pod on all social media, including Patreon, where we have multiple bonus episodes out, including some video episodes of our podcasts. Stay tuned next month for some very special guests and very special reviews. Yes. And if you didn't like this episode, Bhavna, where can they leave it?
In a star-studded 5-star review.
In the meantime, bye.
Bye.